is the Fan Morning Show, Sports 759 of the Fan. Justin Cuthbert, Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus. I really hope that you'll subscribe to this podcast, you'll follow this podcast, you'll leave 5 stars, you'll leave a review if you listen on Apple. I really hope you'll shoot follows, reach out to the show at any given time just to say what's up. Hey, love the show. Also really love Austin Matthews. But today is about gratitude, right? Today is gratitude day. I'm thankful that I got to experience Russell Wilson as my quarterback for a decade, and he won 100 games that I got to watch. That was great. I'm grateful for Austin Matthews' greatness and getting to watch him play hockey at the highest level I've ever seen any Toronto Maple Leafs player ever play. I'm grateful for it. I'm also grateful for our next guest, who hooked me up with some Little Buddha swag that is gorgeous. That is beyond... It is so nice, Kipper. I'm not going to lie. I know you're not a cheapskate. I know you have a taste for the finer things in life. I felt guilty getting that package from you. I won't lie. Kipper gave me some Little Buddha stuff where I went, boy, this stuff is actually, these are luxurious items, my friend. They're very nice. Thank you, my friend. Little Buddha all the way, number one, always class. Shouldn't have been surprised at all.
Well, you've really jumped up in the rankings when it comes to Little Buddha cocktail ambassadors. I got to be honest with you. You're not one of those guys where you talk.
I'll fly by night.
You talk the talk, and then you put your hand out and go, "Where's my money?"
Yeah.
So.
I don't do that.
No.
I don't do that. All I do is just enjoy this fine product, and now I give you marketing around the city. Because that ball cap, listen, I'm happy that I get to put the toque away, but the ball cap is going to get worn out this summer. There's just absolutely no question. That's basically going to be my drinking hat, where I go, hey, it's time for drinkies. I'm put this hat on, and I'll go sit outside, and I'll drink Little Buddha cocktails. New flavor, too, by the way. New flavor. I haven't tried it yet. I'll be honest. Too early in the morning for me to have one. Yeah. I know it's like a little too early so far, but you better believe. Sun's coming out. Day's looking nice. A little bit of a late Raptors game today. Might have a new flavor review coming out later today. All right, Kipper? So you just
That's the raspberry lemon. Save it for the weekend, or maybe even hopefully it warms up a little bit sometime soon here, and you let us know what you think.
Yeah. Here's my guess. It's going to be pretty good. Okay. So Austin Matthews, I said it, man. I'm watching this guy play right now, Kipper, and I sit there and I'm in awe. And it's the only way that I can describe it. I'm in awe of what he's doing right now. I wonder what it's like for you, someone who actually played this game, watching someone do it at that level. Like, you know what it takes to get there. You know how good these guys are in the league. And he's playing with NHL players, like the guy in a men's league where you go, oh, I actually have a friend who used to play junior. I have a friend who played overseas in a small league for a little while. He's going to jump on the ice with us for a bit. You at a charity game, you know, in your heyday, something like that. It's like, that's what he's doing to NHL players, man.
Yeah, you're right, and it is fun to watch, not just for you or Leaf fans, but I think hockey fans around the world are watching something pretty special. You do marvel at the fact that he is 6'2", he probably weighs about 225, 230, and he's quick as a cat out there. The lateral movement, the ability to go east-west is phenomenal. And then the quick release at any moment, it's extraordinary. And then you have also Mitch Marner, who's equally at the top of his game and never been more confident, never felt better scoring or setting up plays. And then the two of them come in. Bunting finds a little niche on that line, and they're carrying the hockey club right now, and last night's another prime example of making some magic and finding ways for the Leafs to win. And it's entertaining, it's fun. I don't know whether or not it can carry them past a first round, but maybe that's not the conversation today.
That's the thing though, Kipper, that's been the conversation since before the year started, all summer, all through until I think this point. But short of a postseason run, this should honestly be the most enjoyable stretch of Leafs hockey in many people's lives, young and old. Like the way Matthews is playing right now, it's sort of it's not once in a lifetime, but this moment doesn't come around. Do you think, like, you know, there's red flags all over the place still? They gave up a bunch of goals last night, four or more in 10 of the last 16, like, for Jack Campbell. Like, the goals, they can't stop them. But Austin Matthews is providing something that, and moments and a stretch that people are going to remember forever. So do you think that fans are maybe going to snap to it and realize, hey, we got to enjoy this while this is happening?
I think for the moment, you're right. But we are in a what have you done for me lately society. And for now, it's good. But if we go into a first round situation, much like last year, where the buildup was phenomenal during the regular season and you dominate the North Division and then you lose in the first round, you tell me what will be a bigger story, Matthew scoring 62 goals or the Leafs disappointing again in the first round? Which one is it?
Don't talk about that.
It's the latter.
Today, I told you, I'm trying to have a good day.
Okay, so we can appreciate it. And the focus is on MVPs and breaking Rick Vive's record and how many goals will Austin Matthews finish. Mm-hmm. But at some point, you got to get back to the bigger prize. This isn't a league where the most important thing is you have a top scorer or you have the guy that wins the most individual awards. It's just about the Stanley Cup. And at some point, as much as you marvel at Austin Matthews, you've got to turn around and say, okay, what's the rest of the team look like? What's the rest of the team doing here? And what's the objective here? Is it to win Austin as many awards as we can, or is it to try to win a Stanley Cup? And eventually the shift will be off of the attention Austin gets and more on the attention the Toronto Maple Leafs get. And it's not today. It might not be tomorrow. And fans can certainly enjoy this run. This is an amazing run by Austin Matthews. But at the end of the day, someone's got to ask the question, can they win playing like this?
Okay, so what's Kyle Dubas thinking right now? Because there is no way that he doesn't leave Scotiabank Arena last night thinking that he can't, that he's not going to reward this guy, that he's not going to reward the play of the first round or the first line with his best effort ahead of the trade deadline to help these guys, because what they're showing has been so special.
Yeah, I don't disagree that he's looking there going, we've got two of the best players in the world right now, and we've got to maximize this. This is the here and now. This is, we have to win now. So there'll be a part of him that says, I'm okay giving up a first rounder 2 years from now. It won't really matter. I've got to focus on today. And that's when he has to go out there and find his Ben Chiarot or Jacob Chychrun or someone of that magnitude and put your team in a position to try to win the Stanley Cup, because believe it or not, Austin, with a new contract looming in less than two more seasons, you've got to maximize this now. And we know how the rosters continue to change because of this horrific salary cap. And Mikheyev will need a new contract that'll probably be unattainable for the Leafs next year. And he's turned into a pretty important player for them. So you're right. Kyle has to now, under 2 weeks, find a way to improve this club so you don't waste a historic season out of Austin Matthews.
Jake,
I was muted. I said it's really interesting, especially since he likes to work ahead of the deadline. And that's all I can think of is that I wonder what the Leafs' deadline day is, you know? What's the actual day that they make their move?
It's fine. You can make your move. You can think you want to make your move. But you can't, you know, force a square peg in a round hole here.
Sure.
And you can't trade for something that isn't there or is too expensive. And you don't want to embarrass yourself either by showing how desperate you are if you're Kyle Dubas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a board of directors MLSE is watching you. You got to also think that you got to sell this program 5 or 7 years from now. And even though you may or may not be a part of it, you can't absolutely leave the organization, you know, in shambles if you're going for it now. So there's a lot to think about for Kyle Dubas in the next week or so, but sure, prices are very expensive. Ben Sherratt's still a Montreal Canadian because no one wants to give up a first rounder right now for him. So either Montreal's price has to drop or someone's going to have to step up, but nothing has happened either way yet. So everybody waits, and the dominoes cannot start falling until we see something significant. And Calgary jumped out early with Toffoli, and it's paid off very well. But they were prepared to give up a first rounder. A lot of teams aren't at this point.
Yeah. Well, dude, like, why would you give up a first rounder when the market is what it is right now in terms of players? This is one of the big issues I have, is that, okay, unless you're talking about the Hampus Lindholm types, right, where, okay, now you're giving up even more of that, fine. Ben Sherratt is already – I'm not giving up a first-round pick for Ben Sherratt. I'm sorry. I'm not doing those things. First-round picks are trades, seemingly, that Toronto shouldn't make. It's why I think that still, to me, the most interesting scenario, if you're using your picks or you're using your prospects, is what Elliot Friedman hinted at a couple of weeks ago, which is trying to get in on a guy like JT Miller. Because to me, the way I'm reading the market is still this, is like, everyone's right. Blue line is the priority. That's the correct opinion. If they can get a stud top four blue liner that can play the right side, you go out and you try to acquire that. Here's the problem. Right now, you know what names I keep reading when it comes to right shot defensemen who could, it's like Justin Braun. Yes. I have zero interest in that. That's not changing anything. You no, might as well. There's nobody out there right now. So listen, go out and load up.
Labushkin's been a nice ad. He really has. But he's not a game changer. He's not. It's not going to be the difference between winning two or three rounds for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But right. And Braun will do that. He'll come in as a five or six somewhere. Sure. And be that guy that maybe on some nights.
Five or six guys.
So it's now what you're talking about. Do you want to go out and make a bold move here? A JT Miller now? Do you want to, like, what do you think? Like, JT Miller is their MVP. Mm-hmm. What do you think you need to give up to get a guy like that?
Lots.
Like, start with Nylander, you know? Start with, something of significance. And I don't believe that Kyle's prepared to do that. Hmm.
So do you get a goalie then? Because when we're talking about this, man, I just look at it, and again, it's like, what does the market bear out? I don't think that the goaltending thing is the best strategy given the wins above replacement nature of this sucker. But, man, like, it's four goals a night basically minimum from these two guys right now.
Okay, and so, we heard, so take, yeah. JD, take Marc-Andre Fleury out of the equation just for 1 second.
Yeah.
Who are you convinced right now that you're going to bring in that will be significantly better than what you think you could still maybe have with Jack Campbell?
So Jack is still your highest option, but I would love to see the Leafs make a trade where they get off the Mrazek contract and they bring in a guy like Holtby.
Again, I don't know whether or not Dallas would be interested in a $4 million Mrazek right now. Yeah. And that, to me, is, you want me to alleviate two more years at $4 million? I'll gladly take a first rounder for that. I mean, you got rid of Patrick Marleau. You got a great draft pick. That's the going rate. And again, now you're just chasing. You're absolutely chasing away key components of a future for you. For what now? For Holtby? Really? Can't see it.
Kipper, how do you assess the games of William Nylander and John Tavares last night? They both broke lengthy slumps. Nylander on the power play, John Tavares on a tremendous play from TJ Brody and Pierre Engvall at even strength. And yet, you know, mistakes galore, right? Nylander made a crucial error in that game, and John Tavares is still fighting it. Do you see what Sheldon Keefe saw in Jack Campbell, which was signs of breaking out of it with those goals? Or is this duo still working through it.
Well, I think they're still working through it. And first and foremost, they are pure scorers. They've been their whole lives. That's what they're paid to do. It was nice that they were able to produce. But it's those moments when they don't score that you have issues. I mean, we've watched Austin and Mitch, and even when they're not scoring, they look like they're in danger of hurting the opposition really badly here. And then there's continued momentum. You just don't get the same thing shift by shift at a pretty consistent basis out of Tavares and Nylander. And that's where, you know, it's got to change a little bit here. I think Nylander, for me, like I watch Tavares, he pushes hard. I mean, he's constantly trying to be the first guy on a forecheck. His work down below in the hash marks, I mean, he's trying his best. I just like to see a little bit more push out of Nylander. You know, there was an early part of the season where you could see him leaning in on guys and taking pucks off of people, and you're like, okay, like if he can be a poor man's Pasternak, the Leaf fans would take that all day long. But I'm not sure where his engagement is outside of, you know, trying to fast break out of his own zone or cherry pick a little bit or go down the wing and take a shot, which we've seen a couple of goals, but that's not real playoff hockey. He's going to have to find a way to be a lot more engaged in the games. And I don't mean necessarily just putting the puck in the net. He's got to have a bigger presence during hockey games, or else it's going to put a ton of pressure on Matthews and Marner and Bunting to continue to carry this. They can't sustain this. It's great now, guys, and I don't want to ruin the party by any means, because it's a good one right now for Leaf fans. But they cannot sustain this. And it doesn't work like this in the playoffs when your star player scored 2 and 3 points a game. It just doesn't happen. And that's where Tavares and Nylander have to pick up the slack. Or again, you tell me what the bigger story will be, Matthews' 65-goal season or the Leafs out in the first round?
I'm looking forward to listening to the show again today. Although I'm sorry you did kill my party. I was trying to have a little bit of niceness in my day after Russell Wilson gets traded. I was thrilled about my little Buddha gear, and then you came on here talking about playoffs, and I was like, all right, that's enough. See you, Kipper. Thanks, buddy.
Have a great one, guys.
See you, pal. Nick Kyprios of Little Buddha Cocktails, which are incredible, and real Kipper and Bourne. Okay, so I was talking about this with Blake a little bit last night, Justin, but I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer here, but there is this hanging over things, which is, what do you think is more sustainable? The Leafs scoring at this rate in the playoffs, or starting to stop more pucks than what they're giving up right now? Because it's every night, man. The bar is 3 goals. The bar is just don't give up more than 3. And they just can't do it. Like, the Kraken stink. There's nothing about that Kraken roster that's all that impressive, and they're just blowing goals by them, and they go, okay, they took the lead. They had to come back against Seattle last night. It does get a little lost. We're very excited about Austin Matthews. Everybody loves Matthews. There's no doubt about it, but he's right in the sense of, I can see where Kipper's looking at this through the lens of, hey, I know everyone's excited about this player. He's phenomenal. He's going to win the Hart this year if people have the guts to, you know, not be frauds and bet for the goalie. But, man, it's really, really hard to envision the Leafs winning multiple playoff rounds with scores like 5-4 every night. You know, it's really hard to see it.
No, I mean, you can't expect that. I don't think either are sustainable, really. Like, you got to think, you know, things naturally tighten up. I think the attention to detail probably will be enhanced when gauging the success of the Maple Leafs defensive core. But guess what? The opposition's going to win. They're going to have a closer eye on the details as well. And despite this prodigious performance from Matthews and Marner and Bunting right now,
very nice.
You have to imagine that when the hard matchups are a little stricter and these players are dialed in from a defensive standpoint a little bit more, well, you're not going to be facing Seattle. in the first round of the playoffs. You're going to be facing the Tampa Bay Lightning, who, guess what? Well, they know how to flip the switch. They do that in postseason series. They are able to flip switches. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of sustainability, answer is neither. But I feel like if it's four goals from that top line or four goals going to the back of your net, I have more confidence that the Leafs will give up less than four in the playoffs.
Oof. I don't know. It just feels like I'm just getting less and less faith in the whole Jack's going to bounce back thing, and Mrazek as an option behind him gives me no sleep.
Still
it just gives me no sleep.
Still a card to play.
There is a card to play. It's funny. One of the texts in the text line we got yesterday was some guy asked about Joseph Woll. I didn't even read it because it's hilarious. But it's just like that's where we're at, where people go, you know, why not just see what Joseph Woll can do? You go, what are you talking about? Ooh, no, yeah. That's
be
not an option.
Be decent in the AHL before I give you a shot in the NHL.
No, there's no question. There's no question. There's no question. Okay, I'm going to weather vane this. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to change my opinion if the news changes. I look at Frank Cervelli's list of available trade targets, right, that he's got up there. Frank, friend of the show, great guy, puts it up on the dailyfaceoff.com. He puts up, I think it's 40 names, might even be more. No, it's 40 names. 40. And of the 40 names, there's not a defenseman that really interests me, honestly. Like, Hampus Lindholm is not what this team needs. Mark Giordano is a stretch, but again, it doesn't balance things out. I do not want Ben Sherratt. I will stand on that island. I've said this before. I think he's better than what the analytics guys say, but he's definitely not a first-round pick for me. There's no way.
What if it's a second-round pick?
Oh, yeah, I do that in a heartbeat. I don't even think twice about it. It's done deal. Like, second-round pick, you can bring in Ben Sherratt. You do that in a heartbeat. There's no question about it.
What if it's
Nick Robertson? No, I'm not trading Nick Robertson for Ben Sherratt. Second round pick, I'm just doing that. I locked that down. I don't hesitate. You're all in. Second round picks don't mean much. First round picks do. Blake, I talked about this with him as well, which is this is the case for Ben Sherratt. Is okay. Has he sucked without Shea Weber? Mm-hmm. He has. And has he been the same guy? No. But we do this with forwards, but we don't do it for defensemen for whatever reason. We do the thing with forwards where we go, there's a value to this guy can play with good players. There's a value to Connor Sheary because he can play with good players. He can play with Sid. But with defensemen, we never do that. Whenever they lose that top-end guy, whenever they lose, like, the first guy that came to mind was actually another Habs guy, Komisarek, because this is what happened to him, is people went, oh, he's a Markov creation. We learned how great Andrei Markov was by seeing what Mike Komisarek looked like without him, which was, oh boy, you're a fifth or sixth defenseman, and we thought you were, like, they gave you the nickname Komisaurus. You were loved, and then you lose Markov, and you're kind of a bum. No offense, but you're kind of a bum. I think the same thing with Ben Sherratt, where you go, hey, if you're actually going to pair him with somebody better on the Leafs, which is what he would get, then I believe that there would be a bounce back thing there, that he has proven that he can play with better guys and he can be effective when he's with somebody decent.
This came about, Justin, by the way, because I don't love the Josh Manson thing as much as some people, mm-hmm. and part of that is, hey, he plays almost all his minutes with Cam Fowler, who obviously has a good reputation and people like and is a very well-paid defenseman. And I know that there's probably some similarity in how you'd fit next to Morgan Rielly after playing with mm-hmm. Cam Fowler that long. But my concern was, and again, obviously the asking price determines a lot of this, but my concern was, okay, what if you put him with Rielly and it doesn't stick? Mm-hmm. Is he a guy that can't play with a lesser partner if you try to juggle things up? Because, you know, all of our sample recently is him with Cam Fowler. So that's how that came up, by the way, about
Josh Manson's still my number one target. Josh Manson's still the guy that I think would be the best fit with the Leafs, the number one guy that they should be going after. And it's for that case that Blake outlined, is that I think that if you're pairing him with Morgan Rielly and you're getting a look at that, you're feeling as though you're going to get the best out of him and that he's the type of anchor player that you want to have with Mo. Here's the problem, though. He's not even on Frank's top 40 trade targets list. So it's not a certainty that this guy's available. He's not exactly being shopped around, which tells you that, hey, Anaheim's fine with keeping him. They're not just going to like end up selling him for the sake of selling him. And if he does hit the market, given what we've talked about, depth of field at right shot defenseman, it's going to cost you a pretty penny for an unrestricted free agent. With questions.
And the Leafs have to decide which well, like what sort of defenseman they are coveting based on who they want that player to play with. If it's to play with Riley, I think Josh Manson makes all the sense in the world. I think the Cam Fowler comparables are spot on. If it is Sherrod and the price dives on him and it makes sense, I mean, I think him and Muzzin, if Muzzin's right, they can they can put on a pretty decent imitation of what Shea Weber and Ben Sherrod did a year ago. I think the question with Sherrod is he closer to the player who was among a group that didn't want to play for Dominique Ducharme for the first, what, 3-4 months of the season? Or is he closer to the guy that's been inspired, it seems, by Marty St. Louis? Ben Sherrod's last few games, very, very impressive. More so to what we expected from him or what we saw from him in the postseason. But again, is he going to be happy? Does he want to come over? Does he want to be a Leaf? Does he want to go down south? Like, you just don't know exactly what the ambitions or intentions are of that player. And you have to be sure about it, and you have to be sure where you want to slot him, because as much as I think Sherrod would work with Muzzin, I'm not convinced he would work with Riley.
If you get to the final week before the deadline and you're getting desperate, or you decide you want to, hey, raise the stakes here and aim even higher, and you want one last look at John Klingberg before the deadline, Leaf fans, we're giving away a pair of tickets to see the March 15th game against Dallas. All you have to do is download Wednesday and Thursday's episodes of the Fan Morning Show and listen for the different code words that will be placed in the podcasts. Text each code word to 590-590, and you'll be entered in for a chance to win. Each code word counts as an entry, and we'll let you know when you win. I think they get pulled Friday. So that's March 15th's game against Dallas. Today and tomorrow's episodes of the Fan Morning Show, find the code word, text it to 590-590. Go to the game with the free tickets. Let us know what you think about Klingberg after. We'll pass that along to Dubas and whoever else it's important to. Last chance to get a look at him before the deadline. Not last chance, because tomorrow's another chance to win those Leaf tickets. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk to Mike Florio. We're gonna bookend the show with JD Seattle Seahawks therapy session. Mike Florio of ProFootballTalk.com after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. The code word for today's episode to text the 590-590 to qualify for your shot to win Leafs-Dallas tickets on March 15th is stars.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. Big day in the football world yesterday. Tough one for our guy JD, the Seattle Seahawks fan. To help us sort through it, ProFootballTalk.com, Westwood One, and author of Playmakers, How the NFL Really Works and Doesn't, which is out next week, March 15th. Mike Florio, thanks for taking the time this morning, man. How are you? Do we have you, Mike?
I'm here. You got me?
Oh, yeah, we got you now. Okay.
Hi.
How are things going in general? But also, the book comes out next week. How stoked are you, man?
Oh, I don't know that stoked is the right word. Angst-ridden, nervous, concerned that nobody's going to buy it. People who do buy it aren't going to like it. And people who already don't like me are going to lay in wait to give bad reviews to a book they've never bought and won't read. You know how that goes.
No such thing. There's nobody that doesn't book, Mike.
I'll say this. Yesterday, I just happened to notice that Amazon was offering the book at 20% off, and I have been aggressively trying to get people to buy the book through our platforms. And at one point, we got as high as like 287 on Amazon. We're in the top 300, which is, there's millions of books available on Amazon. So I was excited about that, and hopefully we're laying the foundation to get some people to buy it. It's capitalism, baby. You know, I want people to buy it. I put the time into it, and, I'm trying to make some money. Aren't we all?
Yes. Buy the book. I think the book's going to be great. I don't think anybody's going to hate on you. And then I realized there's definitely going to be some people who are going to hate on you. And that's the Seattle media, because you're dancing all over their graves today. Everybody's getting grave dance. Everybody in Seattle went, oh, we have this reporting, Mike. Mike, they're not fielding offers on Russell Wilson. Mike, this is in direct contrast with what Pete Carroll is telling us. And you stuck with it all along. You said they're taking offers. And then, boom, Russell Wilson ends up getting traded. And everybody in Seattle that was clutching at pearls because you said that they might take an offer looks like an ass today. So, yeah, I don't think that you're going to be that popular in Seattle, Mike. I just think that's going to be a tough one for you. You've seemed to be more plugged in than just about anybody on this from the jump. So where did this begin?
Well, it began last year, but I think that the roots were deeper than last year. I think there's been a level of irritation in Seattle all along that every time Russell Wilson is up for a new contract, and in his mind he's up for a new contract a year before his contract expires, his agent, Mark Rogers, who is basically the Tom Hagen of the NFL, he has one client. And when you only have one client, you're in a position to drive a very hard bargain for that client because you're not worried about how the positions you take on behalf of one client may affect your other clients, because teams will hold grudges against you and they will get you back in the next negotiation. No, there's only one guy that Mark Rogers negotiates on behalf of, and that's Russell Wilson. And every time he goes to the table with the Seahawks, he forces them to pay market value or damn close to it for Russell Wilson. They're a year away. Well, key word is they were a year away from being in that same position. So I think they understood that now was the time to make the move, especially after last year when Russell Wilson tried to get out in an artful way that didn't entail him saying, I want out, but his agent made that unprecedented statement of, my client is happy to stay in Seattle, but if he were to be traded, he would accept a trade to the Bears, Raiders, Cowboys, or Saints. That was jarring. And this time around, they played it more cool because I think they knew what was going on. I think they knew the Seahawks were ready to make the move, because next year, if they did it when Russell Wilson was trying to get $50 million a year, they wouldn't have gotten as much in trade for him, because if you have to pay a guy on the way in the door, you're less inclined to give up as much to trade for his rights. This is just a straight trade for his rights, and they'll worry about the contract later. So I think the Seahawks got more this year than they would get next year, and so that's how it all came to be. And you know, one of the things that happens when you do something for 20 years, you learn the patterns, you learn the buzzwords, you learn how to develop reliable instincts and unreliable instincts. And what Pete Carroll said last week, we have no intention to trade Russell Wilson, that was to me a blaring, bright, flashing light that he's for sale. We're willing to trade him. Make us change our minds. Because if he's truly not for sale, if he's truly not tradable, they say, why are you asking that question? How'd you get a credential to this press conference? Are you crazy? No, we're not trading. I mean, think about the teams that if you would ask that question of, like the Bills, hey, you're trading Josh Allen? They're not going to say, we have no intention to trade Josh Allen. They're going to say, are you nuts? No, we're not trading Josh Allen. He's the cornerstone of our team. So once Pete Carroll said that, that's when I tried to get people ready. And that's when you get the negative reaction. I think a lot of it is denial. A lot of it is inexperience. Some of it is stupidity. But, you know, teams, fans of teams don't want to see changes like this. So if they hear someone suggesting that the winds of change are blowing, they're gonna plug their ears and say they're not listening, and that whoever's trying to tell me this is crazy. So I think that, and I understand it. I get it. But I did have fun. I am petty enough to go back through all the hostile tweets from last week and press the like button on about 250 of them yesterday. That was fun.
Love that.
As you should. As you should. Tis your right. I love it. Okay, so I'm a big fan of the pettiness. I'm all for it. And again, I'll admit that I even enjoyed it too, because there was a part of me as a Seahawks fan where I went, there's absolutely no way that this should be denied with the veracity that it was. And yes, we ended up in this spot. Okay, so there's so many things though. Okay, one, a two-part question off of the Russell Wilson negotiation things. Is it all that different having an agent try to negotiate ahead of time for a big contract for a top-end quarterback? Because it's like, why is that such a contentious thing? And two, why would Seattle balk at the idea of paying one of the better quarterbacks in football, a guy who literally just had his first losing record as a player on their organization last year during a disastrous season, why would they be so fearful of having to give him a market value contract when his entire career has been, I'm worth more than a market value contract?
Well, I think at some point you have to ask the question, where does he really fit? And there's been, in relation to the other great quarterbacks, you know, the frustration goes back a couple of years, the whole let Russ cook thing from 2020 that preceded his frustration and his mild effort to get out a year ago. But I think Russell Wilson has, for years, wanted to be the centerpiece of the Seattle offense, the guy through whom the offense runs, the way you see the Chiefs' offense, the way the Bills' offense has become as Josh Allen has shown how good he is. It's never been that way in Seattle. It's been conservative. It's been run the ball. It's been, uh-oh, we're down 10 points in the fourth quarter. Hey, Russ, come save us. It's never been all about Russell. They tried to do it in early 2019. They tried to do it in 2020. Last year got thrown off the rails. But you know, the problem is every time they've made a concerted effort to showcase Russell Wilson, the defenses eventually catch up with them and they don't stay ahead of the defenses. So I've just always wondered, how do the Seahawks truly view Russell Wilson? Do they see him as a guy who is one of those quarterbacks around whom an offense can be built and through whom an offense can run? Or do they see him as not that guy? And hey, if you're willing to try, and I said all along, if you see him that way, you pay him, you keep him, and you never even consider letting him go. If you don't see him that way, then trade him to a team that does. And that's what they've done. They finally got to that point where they realized, we're not going to pay this guy $50 million a year. We don't use him like a guy that we regard as a $50 million a year player. So we're going to trade him to a team that will.
Okay, but then you're kind of talking out of both sides of your mouth if you're Seattle, because you're saying, hey, we don't view him as this guy, so let's get as much as possible. But also, we don't want to trade him to the NFC because we don't want him to win, because it's an easier conference to win here. There's a report that just came out that the Washington Commanders offered 3 first-round picks for the services of Russell Wilson. And yeah, okay, I guess we could quibble with the idea that they valued Noah Fant a certain way or blah, 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 blah. But I think it's pretty clear that picks from the Washington Commanders, given their track record, are a lot more valuable than picks from the Denver Broncos. So if they didn't think that he's that guy and you're willing to trade him because you don't think he's worth that value, then why be so afraid of trading him to the NFC?
2 things. First, just because someone else thinks he's that guy, right? I mean, you should get as much as you can. If there's someone else out there who thinks that he's a Patrick Mahomes and they're going to play him like a Patrick Mahomes. So even if you don't think it, you know, it's like if you have a car that you really don't like all that much, that you don't think is nearly as valuable as others do, and there's someone else who thinks it's incredibly valuable, then you sell to them for a hell of a lot more than you think it's worth, even if you really don't want it. There's someone else out there that values it a lot more than you do. And as to the Washington thing, the big flaw that has been forgotten throughout the entire conversation, and it started with Ian Rappaport's report from last week when he said Washington made a strong offer and added no context, no details. One very important detail, he had no trade clause. He didn't want to play for Washington, period. So that ends it. And there was a report yesterday, and I don't know how much of this I believe because it's somewhat self-serving for Wilson, but the Broncos are the only team he wanted to play for this year. That's it. So if that's true, then it doesn't matter whether or not Seattle would have traded him to an NFC team. He's not going to waive his no-trade clause for anyone but the Denver Broncos. And that no-trade clause is powerful. And we've seen it with Deshaun Watson, and we see it now with Russell Wilson. Not that I would advise trading a franchise quarterback to a team he doesn't want to play for even without a no-trade clause, because I just don't think that makes for a good marriage between team and player if the player didn't want to be there in the first place. But he had the ultimate hammer here, and that is why, one of the reasons why he didn't go to Washington. And I'm Seattle. I don't care if he's on Washington. I don't want him in the division, but I don't care if he's on Washington, but he apparently did.
What is it about Denver that Russell Wilson does covet?
Well, they have a team right now that is ascending. They've got a great collection of receivers. They've got the guy who was the offensive coordinator for Aaron Rodgers, and I assume that Russell Wilson is going to be going to expect that Nathaniel Hackett will use an offense that centers around Russell Wilson in the passing game. And, you know, the defense is improving. The problem is he's stepping into one of the best divisions in football. Now he's leaving one of the best divisions in football from a team that doesn't nearly have as much as the Broncos have. And that's what you got to ask yourself. He's been saying that he wants to win three more Super Bowls. And when you've won one in a decade, I mean, unless you're planning to play until you're 50 or 60, at that rate, you're going to have a hard time winning three more. But he probably sees he has a better chance to become a Super Bowl champion with Denver than he did in Seattle. Even though the NFC is currently the lesser conference, the Seahawks are in a spot where I just feel like they're trying to fight their way out of a paper bag. And they're spinning their wheels, and they've kind of lost their way. They get a chance to reset now with all these extra picks and go back to where they were in 2010 and try to rebuild the team. But, you know, Russell Wilson was a franchise quarterback without much of a franchise around him in Seattle. So even though it's not going to be easy with Justin Herbert twice a year, Patrick Mahomes twice a year, the Raiders with Josh McDaniels, it's not going to be easy to get to the playoffs, much less win the division. But I think he's got a better shot at fulfilling his legacy goals in Denver than he had in Seattle.
Yeah, there's still some oddities to me where you go, if you're Seattle, you're going to go into a full-scale rebuild, given that your track record with drafting has been horrendous ever since you drafted Russell Wilson. And two is that you're doing it with a head coach who's 70 years old. There are some weird things here. But if you're looking at Seattle, this fire sale can you, because they released Bobby Wagner, that felt inevitable for a while. Where does this go next? Like, do they end up just fielding offers on anybody and everybody on the team? Like, is Tyler Lockett gone now too? Do you even think about trading a DK Metcalf? Where does it go next for them?
Well, I've seen a suggestion that Lockett would be available as the team pivots away from a high-end passing game. I think they're going to have a problem with Jamal Adams, because one of the big reasons Adams wanted out of the Jets is they stink. And now he's on a team that is going to struggle. He doesn't like losing. And if they're 4-13 or 5-12 as they go through this rebuild, by the time they have rebuilt, he's going to be past his prime. He plays with a very reckless physical style. He's injured often. I don't think he's got a lot of years in the NFL. I think that before the trade deadline next year, 2023, he's going to be traded as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if it happens this year if they can flip him. It's going to be an embarrassment to flip him so quickly because, number one, they paid him, and number two, they gave up two first-round picks to get him. But he's probably pissed off right now that they traded Russell Wilson, because Russell Wilson was one of the reasons he wanted to go to Seattle in the first place.
Just even bringing up his name makes my blood boil. So, yeah, that's good. I'm glad that he'll be upset. But last time we had you on, we talked about how there's this player empowerment thing happening in football with quarterbacks, and we just saw it play out with Russell Wilson, right? He's got his no-trade clause. He ends up in Denver, the place he wants to be. The thing I can't stop thinking about is, what's the next domino then for the NFC? When is there going to be a quarterback from the AFC that says, you know what, where I'd like to go is the conference where I have basically, I don't want to say cakewalk to the Super Bowl, but all things considering, like, you just look at what the AFC has now in terms of quarterbacks and powers versus the no-brainer decision for Aaron Rodgers to say, I'll re-sign here. Rodgers getting longer in the tooth. The Packers keep choking. The Rams went all in last year. Who knows how this thing continues to build itself. Like, unless Tom Brady actually comes back and signs with the Niners, it feels like there are only a couple of teams in the NFC that are really contenders for anybody. Do we see another domino here where a quarterback tries to force their way to an NFC team this offseason?
I think the next one is Deshaun Watson, and the grand jury is going to consider the criminal complaints against him on Friday. There's hope from his camp that at the end of the day, there will be a decision not to indict him at all, and that's going to clear the way for him to be traded next week. The Panthers still interested. They were willing to do it last year before the grand jury had even gotten these claims on its radar screen, and the Panthers aren't troubled by the 22 pending civil lawsuits. And I've seen suggestion that Washington could be in it. I wouldn't be surprised if Philadelphia became interested in Deshaun Watson. He wasn't interested in them last year. He's got that no trade clause. He wanted Miami last year very, very badly. And Miami wanted all 22 of the civil lawsuits to be settled before they would do the trade. Now I think it's incumbent on Deshaun Watson to take a step back and ask himself, which teams in the NFC would he be willing to play for once he gets to the point where he can be traded? And that may be coming very soon. And the Brady thing is not, listen, the same instincts that led me to believe that Russell Wilson was in play, I firmly believe Tom Brady's going to play this year, that he's just biding his time And it won't surprise me if he makes a play to get the Buccaneers to release him as of next Wednesday or after next Wednesday with a post-June 1 designation so they don't take a huge cap hit, but he becomes free and clear and able to plot his next move, because I really do think that he wants to play for the 49ers, and I continue to believe that's where he's going to end up. So watch Watson, watch Brady, and keep an eye on Kyler Murray. Keep an eye on him, too. He's extending olive branches by putting the Cardinals back on his Instagram page, but the Cardinals aren't doing anything to pay him. His agent believes he should get a ton of money, and if the Cardinals aren't going to do it, don't be surprised if Murray starts agitating for a trade out of Arizona.
Yeah, we'll talk about Kyler Murray when the MLB CBA is settled and he's back in the Oakland A's farm system if he really wants to play that leverage. Mike, you know so much about how the NFL really works and doesn't. You should probably write a book about it. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Hey,
man.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. I know you're trying to wrap this up, but I'm going to filibuster for a second. People ask me why I wrote the book. Literally, for years, folks have been saying, you know, you really cover the NFL closely, and you can probably write a pretty interesting book about it. And I didn't want to, because I write about the NFL every damn day. And I ultimately did it to get people to quit telling me I should do it. That was the motivation. But now I've gotten caught up in it, and I want to sell as many as I can. So off we go.
And that book is Playmakers, How the NFL Really Works and Doesn't. It's out on March 15th. Everyone check it out, pre-order, all that good stuff. Mike Florio, thanks so much for taking the time this morning, man.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, host at Westwood One, Playmakers, How the NFL Really Works and Doesn't, out next week.
I've had this little tingle in the back of my mind telling me to put a futures bet on the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. The number, I think, scared me off last time because, hey, it's Trey Lance. But they have the most Super Bowl-ready roster in the NFC, and they are just missing a quarterback. And if it's indeed Tom Brady, as Mike Florio suggests, it may be, there's got to be some value there.
Plus 1,200.
But, yeah, I think there's great value there, especially considering that I think the Niners are the best organization in the NFC right now. I don't trust the Packers. I don't trust the Rams to have sustained success. So if they land Tom Brady with the weapons that they have, also, you know, this should also be considered. If they land Tom Brady, I think there's a chance that they still end up getting Gronk, and they have a scenario where they have George Kittle and Gronk on that team, right? And then all of a sudden they have Deebo Samuel, a run game, an offensive line. It's just, it's a lot of good things. A lot of good things for Niners' future. I hate it because it means that I live in a world where the Niners win a Super Bowl, and yeah, I don't really love that. Don't love the thought of that. But it almost feels like this is the good. This is my spin zone if they win. Is that if you win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady, it's not even a franchise Super Bowl anymore. It's just a Tom Brady Super Bowl. Like, the Niners win, and I don't care. You didn't win anything, Niners fans. This is a Tom Brady one. It was the Tom Brady team. It's not the Niners anymore. Like, he's so great that he goes first on the marquee, right? It's like Tom Brady and the Niners rather than the other way around. You know what I'm saying? Does this make sense to you guys at all? You kind of look at me like, no.
No, it does make sense. It's like, I know he did 2 years there, but the Buccaneers Super Bowl is the Tom Brady 1-1 outside of New England, right?
Exactly.
And this would be the Tom Brady tiptoed his way out of San Fran to get, tiptoed his way out of Tampa to get to San Fran or wherever.
I love the idea, too, of Tampa's Super Bowl, like all those people there going, Tom Brady used us? You damn right he used you. Tom Brady Tom Brady's going to give them the Derek Jeter gift basket, you know? thanks for the evening.
Yeah, it's called the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
still got to enjoy the Super Bowl. He doesn't take it with him and erase your memories. It's not eternal sunshine when Tom Brady leaves. Yeah. You still got it. You just... You just know what it is. It's like the Kawhi title here. It's like, you know what it is.
That was special. That was special. It meant something to him.
Sometimes you're a mercenary. All right. Mercenary tonight, potentially Jakob Poeltl on that double-double tip. Raptors and Spurs at 8:30. We'll be back tomorrow, hopefully, to talk about the return of baseball and a CBA getting done. Don't get your hopes up for that to be in the bag by tomorrow. But we'll be back regardless. We'll talk about that Raptors game. We'll tee up Leafs against the red-hot Coyotes. Maybe see if JD's made it to the fifth stage of grief in the Russell Wilson saga. It's been Blake Murphy, JD Bunkus, Justin Cuthbert. Subscribe to the podcast, The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get it. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.